welcome back to the program. Tonight, a bunch of Game 6s, including the Florida Panthers and the Washington Capitals. Quick note from David Dwork, who covers the Florida Panthers for WPLG Local 10. Carter Verhaeghe, who has 4 goals and 7 points in his last couple of games, including a 5-pointer last game, folks, is a game-time decision tonight after suffering an undisclosed injury yesterday, per Andrew Brunetz, the head coach of the Florida Panthers. So we will stand by to see what happens with Carter Verhaeghe, who has been excellent for the Florida Panthers. And that's a really interesting series. Like, that's a series where it's obvious the Washington Capitals are not intimidated by the Florida Panthers whatsoever, believe they can win the series as well, and we're still waiting for Alexander Barkov to insert himself in a significant way into this series. Panthers look to close out against the Washington Capitals tonight. Watch this one, 7:30 Eastern on Sportsnet 360. In the meantime, my next guest was a delight to watch in the NHL. Large man who moved his feet so quick. 1,779 games in the regular season, 195 playoff games as well, and someone that many of us at the beginning of every season, as you look at each player, pencil him in for minimum 30 goals and 75 points, most recently announcing he's retiring. He is Patrick Marleau, and he joins me now. Patrick, thanks so much for doing this, and let me open up by saying congratulations on a really wonderful career.
Oh, thank you so much. Appreciate the kind words.
Well, I'm sure you're getting a lot of them, and I remember, and I'm gonna get to Kelly Rudy here in a couple of seconds, because I know Kelly and Don are so, you know, crucial to your development as a young NHLer. But I remember Kelly Rudy telling me once years ago, we were talking about some player who had just retired or was about to retire, and he said, you know, Jeff, the minute you think about retirement, part of you already retires. Did you have that same type of feeling? Like, I'm not sure when you started to think about calling it a career, but did you feel that when you did, part of you just retired at that moment?
Yeah, I think you could probably, that's a fair statement to make for sure. I think, once you kind of pops in your head, you're like, okay, well, it's always that you don't get that out out of your head after you think it. So Kelly's dead on there. I think for me, I think this going into this year, it was more, you know, is this going to be it kind of thing. So it wasn't until later on where I was like, okay, this, you know, it's time to hang him up.
When you look back at your career, so many, you know, wonderful moments, and you were such a consistent player, and, you know, certainly turned heads with that. With the skating, certainly, to say nothing of the shot. What do you think kept you in the NHL for so long? Like, you had a really long, productive career. What do you think kept you there?
I think, obviously, yeah, my skating helped me quite a bit. You know, that's one of the main things out there. If you can't skate, you can't play. So being able to, you know, keep pace and, you know, keep trying to push the pace as much as possible over the years, and I think allowed me to, you know, stay on clubs and teams and be effective for as long as I was. Mm-hmm. And then just working at it, not just sitting around saying, oh, I've put in all the work, I've accomplished this and that and played a lot of years, I don't have to work at it anymore. I always continued to work at it and always felt, you know, maybe working at it, I can get better at it, and it'll keep me around for, you know, a little while longer. And that's the way I approach it. I was always trying to get better and mm-hmm. improve myself.
You know, we're in the era now where everybody has a specific coach for everything. You have a skating coach, and you have a mental skills coach, and you have a shooting coach, and you have a dietitian, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, players are like almost like these mini corporations, and the support staff is huge for high-end athletes. What was it like for you? Because I think of the skating, and I think, you know, if I would have seen Patrick Marleau, knowing what I know now about skating coaches, I would have said, oh, this guy must have had a skating coach all the way up. What was it like for you?
Yeah, I think it has definitely turned towards what you're saying. Everybody's got coaches for this and that, and I kind of got into that a little bit later on in my career with skills coaches, and because I saw all these younger guys coming up. Oh, I'm working with my skating coach. I'm working with my skills coach. I'm like, oh, what? What is this? And then, so what am I missing out on here? So I kind of piggybacked on some of the younger players, and you know, kind of picked their brains. Like, oh, what does he do for you? Can I come out and go for a session with you? You know, different things like that. So, and it kept it fresh too. Like, there's always, you know, people trying new things. You see it now, all the moves that are being, you know, performed during the regular season and playoffs. These, you know, the Michigan move. It only, you know, it takes one player to kind of break that. Oh, that can be done in a game, and then takes confidence from these younger guys. Like, oh, I want to do that in the game, and to have that confidence to try it. And you know, I think when I broke into the league, if you were trying any fancy moves and it actually succeeded, you'd be fighting somebody the next shift.
Yep.
So I kind of like how it's gone past that now, and the kids that are skilled and the players that are skilled are, you know, able to showcase that without, you know, any repercussions. And, you know, they pulled off a great move. Like, oh, great. You know, that's great for the game, great for them. I don't think it's considered, you know, being a showboat or anything anymore. It's just showing your skill. I mean, you put in that time and effort to, you know, perfect a move or try a move, and, you know, they should be applauded for doing it and being successful in a game.
Ah, the Michigan's just a wraparound. What's the big deal, Patrick? It's just a wraparound. What's the big whoop? You know, we've seen like you are a large guy who really moved his feet, and you know, there were, you know, I think of, you know, Jean Béliveau was one of the first big men who could really move his feet that everyone marveled at. And, you know, then Eric Lindros certainly took that to a whole new level. And, you know, you joined the NHL. And again, the first thought is like, how can a guy that big move that quickly? Who are some of the players who's skating? I'm focusing a lot on skating here, but who are some of the players that you admired growing up? Like, you looked at their skating and you said, oh man, if only I could skate like that.
Probably Paul Coffey would be one of them for sure. Timo Solani, Alexander Mogilny, right at, you know, that was kind of my, I think I was in like grade 8 right around then when, you know, those two came in rookie year and they were just flying around the ice scoring goals. So, yeah, it'd be Pavel Bure. I mean, yeah, there's some really fast, quick players.
I'm always curious about players, and you had been in the league a number of years when the 04-05 lockout happened. And then we all know the rules changes that came along with it, more of a, you know, a stricter enforcement on the rules and opening up of the game, et cetera. And I'm always curious about players that had to break old habits and essentially relearn the game in some ways. Did you find that you had to do that going into the 05-06 season, or did the game just open up and you said to yourself, oh, wow, this is awesome. I can just skate freely through the neutral zone. This is great. Like, were there any habits you had to break, Patrick, to learn new things?
I had that feeling like, oh man, this is great. But, I think the other habits that I probably had to break was, just being, getting used to not having somebody pulling on you or tugging on you and, you know, holding you or anything like that. So I think that just getting used to that and being able to, like, oh, I can move freely. I can, you know, try these. Now you can try these different moves where before you'd try a move on a defenseman and you would just get wrapped up. You get a bear hug and thrown into the boards. So,
right.
So, yeah, I had to relearn how to be like more of a skill, like use that skill again. Because before, like just like I just said, like you go into a corner and you try and spin one way or spin the other, you would just get wrapped up and thrown in the glass, as opposed to now where you can spin, get some space, and maybe make another move. And so just relearning that part of the game was, you know, probably tough. And I don't know if I ever did relearn it, but that was one of the things that I enjoyed with the rule changes.
You know, that was 05-06 was a really interesting time in the NHL. You know, Carolina Hurricanes end up winning the Stanley Cup. But also that year, Jonathan Chichu scored 56 goals for your San Jose Sharks. And, you know, we look at the Sharks team, we think of yourself, and we think of Joe Thornton. And then, bam, you know, the year after the lockout, Jonathan Chichu pops 56. What did you remember from that year with Chichu?
I just remember that Jumbo was feeding him in the slot, and he was just, you know, teeing him off, and his shot was so dialed in that year. I can't.
Yeah.
All his goals were, or not all of them, but majority of his goals were right up top, right by the goalie's ears. And Yeah, he found that Cheech would find that soft spot in the slot, you know, at least, and Joe would hit him probably like four or five times a game. I think that's why, actually, they're probably, you know, part of the reason why everybody kind of collapses down low now. Them, and I mean, and there's lots of other great duos in NHL doing, you know, a lot of great things like that. But, you know, finding that those soft areas in the slot, Jumbo was really good at it, and Cheech was pretty unbelievable with putting him in the back of the net that year.
I want to ask you about Kelly Rudy. We're talking to Patrick Marleau. I want to ask you about Kelly Rudy. So Kelly is a very cherished, not just broadcaster, but person. I always look forward to every conversation I have with Kelly when I go into Hockey Night on Saturdays. There have been times where I've, and this happened most recently too, having a bad day, and you know, Kelly pulled me aside and just a couple of words, and your whole day is turned around, and you just feel better about yourself, or you come to some sort of greater wisdom about yourself or your situation. That's just the human being that Kelly Rudy is. We all know the story of him and Donna and you with the San Jose Sharks. So when I say Kelly, when I say Donna, what does Patrick Marleau think?
Just gratitude and being thankful for the time that they let me be part of their family. Yeah, I know what you're saying about Kelly. I remember coming home after games, and especially my rookie year, and, you know, venting to him, and, you know, he would put everything in perspective. Like, are you feeling sorry for yourself, or does the coach have a point by benching you, you know, kind of thing. But he always, he always took the time to listen and share his wisdom with me, because obviously he had a lot more years than me. And he knew all the ins and outs of, like, even I had you learn about the players union, the NHLPA. I learned all that from him. But just driving to the rink and talking hockey with him was some of the greatest memories I'm going to have with him.
And really funny too, hey? Like, he's a really funny dude too.
Yeah. I love his, we have a similar sense of humor, so I loved hanging out with him, and always had a great one-liner, especially in the back of the bus or with the trainers, and you know, that dry, sarcastic sense of humor. I loved it.
I love it too. We all do. We'll end on this one. And there doesn't have to be an answer. I mean, you're not obliged. I mean, you've done enough. But what's next for Patrick Marleau?
I'm trying to try and figure that one out. But I think right now it's just being home with the kids and the family, and I guess learning how to be an adult. I think when you're a hockey player, you're told where to be, what time, when you can eat. So now it's up to me and to try and figure out, what I'm going to do throughout the day, which is it's more of the kids' schedule now than my schedule. So I go off their schedule.
You know, I'll end on this one. Ron McLean has told the little parable before about the little boy that goes up to his mom one day and says, "Mom, when I grow up, I want to be a hockey player." And she smiles at her son and says, "Son, that's great, but you can't do both." And that's what I think you're kind of hinting at here, Patrick. Listen, wonderful career. It was so much fun watching. I think I speak on behalf of everybody who watched Patrick Marleau play. Congratulations, and we wish you nothing but the most success in your post-playing career. Thanks so much for doing this.
Well, no problem. Thank you for having me.
Patrick Marleau, wrapping up the career after 1,779 regular season games, 195 playoff games, and what a career it was for Marleau. That size, 500, by the way, 566 goals, we should point out as well. Over 1,100 points as well. 72 goals in the playoffs, 127 goals in the playoffs as well. This guy had a real productive career with the San Jose Sharks, a couple of seasons with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and then 8 games with the Pittsburgh Penguins. That was a wonderful career to watch, and man, could that guy move his feet. As you bring in Matt Marchese, hour 2 is on the horizon. Eric Francis, Sam Cosentino, going to be stopping by. How are you today, Matty? Are you okay after, I know you're a big Leafs fan, are you okay with what happened last night? Was there enough in there that you're feeling optimistic about Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, You know what the thing was the Leafs were the better team in overtime. Vasilevsky was great. He made some great saves. And I was pissed off? Sure I was. But I mean, they were the better team. So I mean, I've just seen how this movie ends, Jeff. I can't get over all the losses that I've seen to give me any sort of optimism. But
yeah,
this looks like a different team, though. I think overall, it's a team that is in the fight right now. Where I found in years past, even though series have gone seven or whatever, it's not been the same feel. This just has a different feel to it.
So the one thing that I'm curious about here is, and I only got a couple of seconds, but the one thing that I'm curious about is going into this season, everybody talked about how if the Maple Leafs don't have some type of playoff success, if they don't get out of the first round, there's going to be trades and firings, and it's be every single level. They're going to look at players. It's going to be the bench. It's going to be, you know, the manager's suite, all of it. Like, it's just going to be a bloodletting, you know, pitchforks at the castle gate. That's what it's going to be like. And I look at how they've played the Tampa Bay Lightning. You can make the argument that the Maple Leafs are either on par or better than the Tampa Bay Lightning. Certainly 5-on-5, that's true. If they lose tomorrow, Maddie, and it's not a blowout, like if the Maple Leafs are a no-show tomorrow, then I think everything's back on the table. But if they lose a squeaker tomorrow, are we still talking about trades and firings in Toronto? Or have they demonstrated enough to the fan base and the rest of the NHL that they're an improved team, they're an elite team that just got a bad draw in the first round?
This is a good team that got a bad draw in the first round. Some of the decisions are going to be made for them. That's the other thing that we're not talking about. Like, is Ilya Mikheyev going to be back? Probably not, because he's probably priced himself right out of Toronto. What happens with the goaltending situation? Does another team get enamored with Jack Campbell and outbid the Toronto Maple Leafs and now they're looking for another goalie? Or can they move Peter Mrazek? Like, I still don't – even William Nylander, you know, that's the first guy everybody wants to trade, but – I know he had that in the blowout game. He was not very good, but other than that, he's been pretty good. He's put up numbers. He's done what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to score goals and he's supposed to get points. That's William Nylander's job, and he's done that. The difference from this year to previous years is that the stars are showing up. Like John Tavares with two big goals last night. Auston Matthews again. There's just, like I said, it just feels different. So like you said, if they get their doors blown off tomorrow, then yeah, there's going to be changes. But if they lose in overtime in Game 7, I just don't see it.
Tomorrow's going to be great. Three Game 7s. Boston Bruins, Carolina Hurricanes, Toronto Maple Leafs, Tampa Bay Lightning, Edmonton Oilers, Los Angeles Kings. Meanwhile, some Game 6s tonight, and these should be fascinating. Washington Capitals and the Florida Panthers, Pittsburgh Penguins and the New York Rangers, and the Calgary Flames can close out tonight against the Dallas Stars after a 3-1 win in Game 5. Ottinger versus Markstrom. Once again, Friday night, Calgary and Dallas. Eric Francis joins me for comment on that. Sam Cosentino on his draft rankings. And Carl Alsner, Capitals analyst. Big second hour coming up. Look forward to having you with me. Don't go anywhere.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. Welcome to Hour 2. Coming up in about 15 minutes' time, Sam Cosentino, lead draft analyst at Sportsnet, our lead prospector. Top 16 rankings are out. How about a little mock draft, draft lottery style? Sammy's done it. Shocker, Shane Wright first overall. What about Yuri Slavkovsky? What about Logan Cooley? All the way down. What about Nemish? What about Savoy? Geeky, what are we doing? Talk to Sam about that coming up in a little bit. Carl Alsner, by the way, Caps analyst, co-host of the All's Caps podcast. Really delightful guy to talk to. Very much look forward to that conversation, as I look forward to this one. He is Eric Francis, covering the Calgary Flames for Sportsnet, and he joins me now. Eric, how are you today, bud?
I'm great. How are you, my friend? Some exciting viewership coming up tonight, tomorrow.
Well, the next couple of days, like I was saying to, you know, Halford and Bruff this morning on our Vancouver station, you know, get ready for some ironing of the couch with your ass. Like, this is a good day to start really, you know, denting some of the furniture with your butt, because great games tonight, great games tomorrow. Listen, and we'll see about Sunday. That's all contingent on what happens tonight. I want to get your thoughts on a couple of the other series, but we'll start by talking about the Calgary Flames. And, you know, Elliot and I on the podcast last night and on the hit to kick off the show today, you know, trying to stress the point that you look for teams that grow through the playoffs. And I think, Eric, you can make the point that from game one to game six tonight, the Calgary Flames have done a couple of things. One, they've gotten better. And they've gotten smarter once they, you know, dropped, you know, chasing John Klingberg all over the ice. And they've also not panicked. Like, through all of this and through adversity and through Jake Oettinger being the best goaltender in the playoffs so far, I haven't seen the Calgary Flames panic at all. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Yeah, no, I think you're bang on. Like, that's one of the most interesting things about this team this season, which is, you know, trust the process, stay with the system, stay with the structure. Sutter's hammered that home with these guys for the last year and a half since he got here. And it's something that they've stayed true to. I mean, through the first 40 minutes of last night, or the other night, game five, the Calgary Flames, you know, it was a stalemate. I mean, they were getting nowhere, and it didn't look like they were going to score that goal to tie the game in the third. I think most fans were terrified that was going to be the case, but we asked after the game what was said in the dressing room, what was the message going into the third period when they get their three goals and have that comeback. And the message is a simple one: stay true to what we are. You know, keep stay the course. Don't change anything. In years past, this team would get down a goal or two and completely abandon the system, the structure that they had in place. And with Sutter, he won't allow that to happen. And you're right. That's the biggest difference in this team over the last year and a half. They just stay with it. And ultimately, they know they have the confidence and the talent to get the job done more often than not.
So let's go back to game five. So Jake Oettinger is being Jake Oettinger, which is frightening. And as Ron McLean has pointed out, that blocker, oh man, that blocker. Jason Robertson scores in the second. He finally gets his first. They've had to shuffle up lines in Dallas. And Robertson finally gets going and gets on the board. And then it's nervous time for the Calgary Flames. Now, Backlund scores to tie it up. Mangiapane gives the team the 2-1 lead. The Mangiapane goal specifically, it's a great shot. It's, you know, off the pipe and in. It's a great sound. Where was the building louder? Was it the Backlund goal or the Mangiapane goal? I think it was the Mangiapane goal. And to me, it sounded like the loudest I've heard the Saddle Dome all season long. What was it to you?
Yeah, it's probably the loudest all season. The Mangiapane goal, it's so tough. When you get the decibels like that, it's tough to differentiate between the two. But
yeah,
the reaction was different, and I'll explain how. The first one was tremendous relief because, like I said, it was 7 minutes into the third. They were down 1-0. They were in danger of going down. And Leaf fans know this feeling all too well. You're in danger of going down 3-2 in the series, and it's like, oh, boy, here we go again. This franchise just can't figure it out in the playoffs. They just can't do it. And then they finally break through against a goalie, who's playing, he's probably the story of the playoffs right now.
Yes.
And you finally solve them, and they're just tremendous relief. Oh, my Lord, okay. We have a chance. And then when Backlund scores, it's not relief. It's more like elation. I can't believe now we're leading. This is where we expected to be in this series. So, you know, it was loud in both cases. One of those great, you know, all these Canadian cities, the rinks are just so phenomenal. You know, I'm here in Dallas right now. This is an incredible rink. Always love this rink. But it's not as loud as the Canadian cities. And I've been in all of them. I haven't been in Toronto for a playoff game for a lot of years. But I can see on TV, it's pretty crazy, and it's just so fun to be a part of, isn't it?
How's the humidity in Dallas?
Oh, my they're having an exceptional heat wave right now, like even for their standards this time of year. It's 33 degrees, and it hits you like a wall when you leave the hotel. Yeah. And I am not complaining for one second. Please don't misconstrue. I am so happy to be here.
It's I really love Dallas. I really do. Last time I was there was for the draft, and I know what you mean about the humidity and the heat as well. I remember going for a run, and like within the first 15, 20 minutes, I'm like gasping and gagging. I'm like, oof, this is different than running back home. Let me ask you about Jacob Markstrom, because we talk a lot about Jake Oettinger in this series, and for good reason. Oettinger has been next level good, but right there with him, I mean, it's not to the Oettinger levels, but it's right there. Jacob Markstrom, your thoughts on what we've seen so far from the Swedish goalie?
You know, I guess you could make a pretty good argument that he's been, if Oettinger's the talk of the playoffs, or certainly the talk of this series,
yeah.
I still think you can make the argument that Markstrom's been better. I know that sounds odd, but he's got a better goals against average. He's leading the series, and he's the number one reason why they're leading the series. There's no margin for error with either of these goalies. You make one slip up and you lose the game, and suddenly you're the second best goalie in the game. And, you know, Rick Bonus just spoke, and he just said, you know, it's just so obvious why this guy's a Vezina Trophy finalist. You know, he's not getting any of the accolades he deserves. Two games in a row, the last two wins they've had, nobody asked a question about Jacob Markstrom until the very last question. And it was just a token, you know, talk a little bit about your goalie. Otherwise, nobody's bringing him up. He's absolutely, and I don't say this in a bad way, he's taken for granted here. When Brad Treliving, you know, I use the term stole, but when he stole, you know, he paid a pretty penny, he outbid everybody. But when he stole him from the Vancouver Canucks in free agency, you know, he was going to leave anyway, but then He killed two birds with one stone, because he stole him from out from under the Oilers at the same time. And that was just, you know, one of the biggest franchise moves in decades, because you solidified the most important position. No one needs to worry about Jacob Markstrom now or any time in the next 4 years.
That sent the Oilers reeling. That was mm-hmm. two hours before the free agent window. I think it was 2 hours. I believe it was 2 hours before the free agent window opened. That Markstrom's camp said, "Yeah, we're taking the Calgary offer," I think Edmonton thought they had that one wrapped up, and they've kind of scrambled since in Edmonton. And listen, having a goaltender like that is such a luxury. I don't need to tell any Calgary Flames fan that. I don't need to tell any Vancouver Canucks fans how much of a luxury it is having Thatcher Demko. As I can hear some celebrations going on in the background. That is such a huge luxury to have.
Hey, all of life is... I just want to interrupt you. The celebration you just talked about, it's so funny you said that. Right when you said it, they were celebrating because they beat Markstrom in a drill, and they hardly ever do it. So that's why they were celebrating. Isn't that funny you said that?
Who was it? Who are the skaters?
Well, you'll be shocked to hear that it was Johnny Gaudreau who beat him.
Oh, wow. Surprise. Ooh.
Yeah.
Stunning. Hey, speaking of Johnny Gaudreau, are you surprised that, considering, you know, the nature of this player, who will be on a lot of Hart Trophy ballots when they all get revealed, all the top fives, and how he's on an expiring contract and what he's meant to the Calgary Flames, that, and I know, you know, both Brad Treliving and Louis Gross, the agent, no one was going to negotiate in the media, both agreed to keep it down, not talk about it till the end of the year. Are you surprised that it didn't become more of a, I guess, what's the phrase, distraction story all throughout the season?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I just knew that there was never going to, you know, I stopped digging because I knew that nobody was ever going to reveal anything in either camp. And I think also what happened was that the last offer from the Flames was such that it was not even close. So in the eyes of Johnny Gaudreau's camp, and it was just like, you know what, this is a waste of everyone's time. Let's let this season play out, which is obviously a smart thing to do for Gaudreau. A, no distractions, and B, he was having a Hart Trophy-like season. Let's let him finish it off. And more importantly, let's see what he can do in the playoffs. Johnny Gaudreau hasn't been the best playoff performer over the course of his career. That's a bit of an understatement, and it's a bit of a bugaboo, and, you know, he doesn't really agree with that assessment, but I think most hockey fans in Calgary do. He has been very, very good in these playoffs, to the point where Daryl Sutter said yesterday he's taken that step, and he's very proud of him. He's taken that step from being a player who can dominate in the regular season to a player who can be a difference maker in the playoffs. He only has a point a game, but, you know, his one goal was that penalty shot, you know, dagger here in Dallas in game four, which, you know, got them back in the series. So he's been clutch. The Stars play such a stifling brand of hockey. They don't get enough credit for being that good defensively. They've been doing it since Hitch was here, much to all of our dismay. And but he's been fighting through it. He's taken a couple of headshots. This is a guy who, you know, for a lot of reasons, people thought he couldn't hack it in the playoffs. He's a perimeter player. He can't break through. He's been great. He's been really, really good. The numbers might not show it, but he's been great. And everybody in this room still sees him as their biggest threat.
So both the Calgary Flames and the Edmonton Oilers are one win away from the Battle of Alberta. How much, if anything, is this part of a daily conversation right now?
Every day it gets talked about in Calgary and in Edmonton, I'm sure. I don't even really like talking about it, to be honest, because I think it's so good. It would be so good for the province, both franchises. But I honestly think, Jeff, it's so much bigger than that. I think it'd be great for hockey, period. And I think even in the States, people pay attention to the battle the last couple of years since Matthew Tkachuk kind of reignited it with Tassian and the goalies got involved and all that. I think that it would be as big a deal for hockey as we've seen, certainly in Alberta. But I just refuse to believe it can happen. It's been 31 years since it happened. And every once in a while, it looks like it might happen over the course of the year, and it never does. So I'm not counting any chickens before they hatch when it comes to the Battle of Alberta.
Well, if it gets there, you know that Matthew Tkachuk's going to be at the center of it no matter what happens. But I am curious about this series because I don't know if it was someone had a conversation with Matthew Tkachuk. He just realized on his own that he's more important playing hockey than chasing John Klingberg all over the ice. But something changed with Matthew Tkachuk. Is that just him realizing the moment, realizing when to park it, that he doesn't need to be, you know, doing that every single game? Like, what's happened here with Matthew Tkachuk?
Well, I think the reason I consider him the most unique and versatile player in the NHL, because I think he can beat you in any number of ways. You know, he finished sixth or seventh in scoring this year, over 100 points. I don't think people thought he had that in him. 40 goals, I don't think people really thought he had that in him. But everyone knows what he has in him in terms of his ability to agitate and turn a game on a dime with his emotion and his, you know, being a little rat out there sometimes. And he sees that term affectionately. You know, but yes, the first three games he was, I don't buy the idea that it was a distraction and it took him off of his game. But what happened was after game three, the Flames en masse realized we can't play 4-on-4 hockey. We don't want to trade power play opportunities with these guys. We want 5-on-5 hockey. There was no team better in the NHL this year, 5-on-5, than the Calgary Flames, statistically. And they feel like that's where their best chance is to win a series. So instead of letting the refs drag 1-and-1 off constantly for 4-on-4 hockey, they just said, let's stop that entirely. And that means you too, Matthew. And, you know, there's nothing to gain from a scrum. After the whistle, Daryl Sutter says there's nothing to gain from a scrum. And they've started to heed that advice. And since then, they've won both games because they're playing more and more 5-on-5 hockey, and that's the bread and butter of this team.
It sure is. This has been great. I'll let you get back to the games happening over your shoulder right now as Johnny Gaudreau tries to beat Jacob Markstrom once again. And we look forward to game six tonight, man. This should be a great Friday night around the NHL. And, you know, the last one on the card might be the most intriguing one. The Calgary Flames facing off against the Dallas Stars. Thanks so much for this, Eric.
Thanks, Jeff. Anytime, my man. Cheers.
There he is. Eric Francis covers the Calgary Flames for Sportsnet in Dallas for Game 6. It is Rick Bowness versus Daryl Sutter. It is Jake Oettinger versus Jacob Markstrom. It is the Calgary Flames facing off against the Dallas Stars. This one's been good. Like, and if it ends tonight for the Dallas Stars, you know, there certainly will be the questions. You know, this is, this is an owner that wanted a, how shall we say, return on investment. This was the year that he wanted that return. So if they end up falling short against the Calgary Flames, either tonight or in game seven, I think there'll be a lot of questions about what happens on the ice and off it as well. And then the question will certainly become almost immediately, Does Rick Bowness want to come back? We shall see. Still a big hockey game tonight in Dallas. The Stars facing off against the Flames. Meantime, my good friend Sam Cosentino stopping by the show. Sammy, how are you today, buddy?
I'm doing great, Jeffy. What a time of year. You got to love it because I know you're a baseball guy too.
Big
so this
time.
This just must be heaven for you, eh?
Oh, well, listen, both Major League Baseball and kids baseball as well. I had one kid out yesterday, dropped a tough one to Whitby. I got another one who's playing a tournament this afternoon. And then right after that, we're hustling to Memorial Field in Stouffville for a baseball game. So it's yes. If it weren't already co-opted, Sammy, by the Disney Corporation, I'd say it's the most wonderful time of the year. How about that, Sam?
I like it. That's great, man. That's great.
Really cool. Between hockey and baseball, I'm a happy guy right now. Hey, how did you feel about the draft lottery? I want to get to some of your mock draft and who's going to go where and who's looking good. But how did you feel about the draft lottery itself? I thought one of the intriguing things was watching Tom Fitzgerald try not to smile as it became obvious that he was going to get a superstar pick.
Yeah, you know what? Two things I thought about it. New Jersey, the luck sort of continues in that regard, but at some point, a lot like Ottawa, you got to take all these prospects and turn them into legit NHL players. And the other part, I felt bad for Seattle. Just like everything that Seattle does is going to be compared to Vegas, whether it's the rink, the atmosphere, the expansion draft, what they do moving forward, everything is going to be compared to Vegas. And Vegas was a once-in-a-lifetime type of thing. And so for Seattle, you know, one thing they could really use is an influx of high-end talent. And they're going to get that at four, but I would have loved if they had got into the two spot or at least maintained their spot at number three, as what the odds suggested with the pre-lottery odds.
You know, I wonder about Seattle as well. And, I wondered about them all season long. And I think we all sort of looked at the expansion draft and kind of went, okay, let's see how this plays out. Wasn't exactly a great season, but at the end of it, we got a peek of how good Matty Beniers is going to be in the NHL. Just as a quick pause on Seattle here, Sam, and you watched this guy play plenty before he got to the NHL. What do Kraken fans have in store?
Oh, amazing. A guy who's all kinds of character, and I think in a couple of years, everyone's going to look at Seattle and just think of Matty Beniers. The way, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying he's Sidney Crosby, but when people look at Pittsburgh, they think of Mario Lemieux and Sidney Crosby. When people look at the Oilers, they think of Gretzky, they think of McDavid. When you look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, you think about Austin Matthews and Matt Sundin, and I don't go any further back than that, but I think he's going to be an identifier for the franchise. Mm-hmm. All kinds of skill, all kinds of personality, really character guy. Has had a lot of neat experiences so far in his career. I love him, though. Playmaker, goal scorer, like he brings everything to the table. Really, really happy that, he's going to be the face of the franchise here in the very near future.
He certainly will. And the question then becomes, with the first overall draft pick, the Montreal Canadiens, who will, of course, as we all know, host the draft as well, and we got to go all the way back to 1985 when a team has hosted and selected first overall, and that's the Maple Leafs with Wendell Clark. Interesting, I had Gord Stellick on yesterday, and I asked Gordy, I said, did anyone offer you anything for the first-round pick? Anyone try to get it? And he said the Islanders had two picks. One was, I think, in the top 10. The other was just outside the top 10. And Bill Torrey offered both of them to the Toronto Maple Leafs for that first overall pick. I mean, the Islanders eventually ended up getting Wendell Clark some years later. But we all know how Bill Torrey, would dine out on the Western League, whether it was Trotsche, whether it was Clark Gillies. Like, they did a really good job grabbing players from the West. But nonetheless, the Montreal Canadiens with the first overall draft pick, what, in your estimation, is the right move? What should Kent Hughes do here?
Well, I mean, I believe Shane Wright to be that guy all season long. And I know he's taken some hits throughout, and that tends to happen even when you miss a year, but you come into the league early, like John Tavares. I can remember talking about him and the scuttlebutt around him. Is he going to be able to have the wheels to play? What else is there that you don't like? You get over-scouted, that sort of thing. But when it comes to Shane, honestly, Jeff, it starts for me with the character side of things. Like, this guy has character all day and all night. So if you ask him to do something, be it in the community, be it on the ice, you're going to accomplish it in a low-maintenance way. He's given the task. He's going to complete the task. He's going to complete it at a level of well above average, and you're going to be happy with it. So you think about teams that are successful, strength down the middle of the ice. Nick Suzuki is a beautiful piece for Montreal right now. I think Shane Wright, maybe not as early as next year, but not too far down the road, fits into that number two spot absolutely perfectly. And at the very least, Jeff, your insurance is he fits in as a 3C guy. And we know how important it is. Take a look at Tampa's third line and what they're doing in the playoffs right now. We know how important that 3C position is, especially when you're anchoring a line that now has a lot more prominence in the game than it ever used to.
You know, Owen Power goes first overall to the Buffalo Sabres, and he goes to Michigan. We're used to seeing the first overall draft pick go right into the NHL, but Owen Power didn't. Is there any chance that, let's assume Shane Wright goes first overall to the Montreal Canadiens, congratulations. We all know the heavy lift that Montreal is going to go through here. We all know Kent Hughes and Jeff Gorton and what they're trying to put together with Montreal is going to take some time. There's not going to be we're taking a little bit of a pause, half step back, and then we're going to lurch forward. This is going to take some time until they figure all this out, get everything sorted out, and get the proper pieces in place. Do you think there's any chance that Shane Wright goes back to junior hockey next year?
Oh, boy. I do think there's a chance, and I don't know when that would be. So would it be the Leon Draisaitl thing where he played 37 games for Prince Albert, got traded to Kelowna, went back and went to the 2015 Memorial Cup with Kelowna after having a taste the year before? Could it be that scenario where the player goes back before the 40-game mark? Could it be he gets his nine games as a bit of a taste just to see how he is, gets used to Marty St. Louis and the rest of what's going on there, learns a little bit from the pro guys, and then goes back? That is always a real possibility. But here's the one thing. The one thing that you have to take into consideration is if you're a strong believer in development and you know that he's missed a year, if you do send him back, you gain that year back that you missed. Now, having said that, Shane may write his own story, get to camp and say, I'm too good to be sent back. He may be able to write his own script. He has that kind of talent. And surrounded by NHL players, Jeff, I mean, who knows what he's going to be capable of doing. So, is it a possibility? Yes, it is a possibility. We're in a scenario that we haven't seen before where this guy has missed a full year. That hasn't really happened. Guys have been injured and so on and so forth, but they haven't really missed a full year. And so I think that more than anything might dictate.
Let's do the top five. We all know some of the names here, like, you know, Logan Cooley, who's, you know, we'll see. Like, I don't, he may end up playing in the NHL next season, if not on his way to Minnesota. Yuri Slavkovsky, who we all got to know very well, thank you very much, at the Olympics. And then after number three, and who knows, like maybe one of the defensemen could jump up and grab one of those top three spots. But it seems as if there's a drop off, and then we start talking about the two defensemen. How do you see the top five shaking out right now, Sammy?
Well, I think some of that, honestly, is still going to be determined, Jeff. So, and I say that because Slavkovsky is going to play in the Worlds. Juracek and Nemec, they're all going to play in the World Championships for their respective countries. Now, if you see Slavkovsky go back there and puts up the performance, even half of what we saw in the Olympics, that may cement him as the number two spot for a New Jersey team that obviously needs size. Right now, I just think Logan Cooley is the better player, and I don't think New Jersey's in a position to battle over a need as opposed to taking the best player. So I do believe that Logan Cooley is the next best player. So Cooley is a super, super dynamic player. He looks a lot different than Shane Wright. He really jumps off the page at you. I think Shane has a much more complete game that's more suitable and translatable to the NHL right away, where Logan has like that home run, you know, Trevor Zegras type of potential. And that's a kind of cool thing to hang your hat on. So getting back to the European players and Juracek and Nemec, two right shot defensemen. You always talk about it on your show, how much additional value they have. And the thing is about those two defensemen, Jeff, there is a big drop off until you get to the next best one. So if you're sitting there and you're kind of dabbling between next best player and positional need, and you don't see a huge gap between what that next best player looks like, and you need a D, then you're going to lean on one of those two right shot defensemen. Each of them bring a little something different to the table. But those guys are going to have a chance to prove their stuff at the Worlds. And for Juracek, that's huge because he's missed so much time out with the knee injury. People want to know what he can do if he's the guy that's going to replicate the guy leading up and, you know, for a very short time in the World Juniors.
I was talking to his agent the other day, who assures me he's fine and good to go and the injury's in the rearview mirror. What have you been led to believe?
Yep, same sort of thing. I know he's been skating here for a little while. I want to say he got into, and I'll use the soccer terminology, some friendlies just to kind of get him back up to speed. But I'm yep. anxious to watch him play because I thought he was dynamite in the first half before he got hurt. So this tournament is really big for him. And oftentimes we're not looking at the Worlds as that last scouting piece. You might get a drib and a drab of a guy here and there. But for this one, it's going to have some meaning. Marco Kasper, who's going to play for Austria, played in the SHL all year long, he's going to play in the event. I think he has an opportunity to boost his stock. So there are guys that are going to have a big opportunity here at the Worlds.
Thoughts on Matthew Savoy? I'm a big fan. A lot of us are. Plays with Winnipeg Ice of the Western Hockey League. High level, as you know, Sam. A really high level team. Your thoughts on Matthew Savoy?
I absolutely love this guy. He gets out on the ice and he makes you notice him right away. And I think about the prospects game where he's absolutely dynamic. Every time he touched the ice, you got on the edge of your seat to see what he was going to do. So the size thing, no doubt, is always going to play a factor, especially with the recency bias of the playoffs and how heavy the playoffs are. But a guy who shoots the puck, probably not enough, but shoots it with great accuracy and a ton of depth to his shot, but is an amazing passer. Like, he could step into the NHL right away and pass the puck on the same level as, you know, as an average to better than average NHL player right now. And some people say, oh, what's so hard about passing the puck? When you're doing it crisply, hitting the tape, when you're going through sticks, when you can sauce it, when you can do it on the backhand, that's a skill that I think probably doesn't get enough credit in the game. And Matthew's extremely good in that regard. He's also a guy who doesn't take any crap. He might be a smaller guy. People think they can push him around. He'll get you with the stick. He'll get you with the cross check once in a while just to let you know that he's not a guy to be taken advantage of.
You know, I'm always curious as well about the player that seems risky if you only have one pick in the first round. But for some of the teams, and whether it's, you know, CBJ, whether it's the Buffalo Sabres who have multiple picks, you wonder if they spend one on Brad Lambert. What should we know about this kid?
His skill set is awesome. It's amongst the best in this draft class. He is a top 10 talent in this draft class. There are a couple of issues surrounding Brad that may not make him that. The first is when you change teams over in Liga for the opportunity to get more ice time, you're given that opportunity, you get it, and then you don't take full advantage of it. That leaves some people wondering, because oftentimes the transfer of teams in European hockey is not a frequent occurrence. And so when something like that happens, especially with a younger player, you tend to raise an eyebrow. Now, there is going to be a school of thought out there that some people think he did it to get away from Kemmel, who was his teammate on his original team. Because Kemmel had really separated himself at the start of the year. For a good, you know, month, he was leading Liga in scoring. But also the inconsistency that he's shown throughout the course of his career. Internationally at the World Under 20s 2 years ago, he was awesome. And then he goes to the Under 18s where he's playing against younger players and he's just okay. He goes to the World Juniors for 2 games this year. He absolutely lights it up. And then the World Junior stops. He goes back. He switches teams. So there's just a lot of noise around this player. But if you take him in a vacuum, Jeff, my goodness, he has top 10 skill. He is unbelievable. Edges well, skates like the wind, shoots the puck, passes it. He's a really, really talented guy. But I do find him to be a bit of an anomaly here. I'm absolutely fascinated to see where he ends up.
Did you ever think there was a chance Saskatoon Blades hold his rights in the Western Hockey League? Did you ever think that there was a chance he was going to show up in the dub?
I did. I thought it was going to be after the World Juniors, and maybe because it was only 2 games. I don't know if there wasn't enough time to make that happen. But the flip side of that, Jeff, is you'd be giving up a pretty good paycheck in Liga, which he's been used to because he's played there essentially for 3 years. And do you want to do that to go back into junior hockey? For me, that would have been a wise decision. Saskatoon was a pretty good team. He would have been surrounded by some pretty good pieces. He could have gotten all the minutes that he was yearning for in the first half of the year where he didn't get them. So, I'm always going to lean towards that way because look at the National Hockey League. It's made up of roughly 40% of CHL graduates.
It's true. With Sam Cosentino here on the Jeff Merrick Show, a couple of minutes left with you for a couple of quickies. Who is the one player that you look at and you say, someone's going to get a real gem because he's not valued as high as he should be?
I think Kevin Korchinski is that guy. I think he's a fascinating study, this guy. Plays defenseman. Defenseman plays in Seattle and is a real go-getter. Like, he's up the ice. He's all over the place. Sometimes his defensive play leaves a little something to be desired. But in terms of transporting the puck and moving it around the O zone, I don't know how many defensemen can do what he can do in this draft class. Having said that, he's had a pretty good rise to prominence. I think the other guy would be Owen Pickering, big, tall, lanky defenseman, plays in swift current, just growing into his body. Get him into the pasta house, let him eat a little bit, put on a few pounds, and let's see what happens with Owen Pickering.
That just stunned me. That's a great idea. Get him into the pasta house. Sammy, this is it's always great talking to you about this kind of stuff. I want to end on this one. The Russian factor this year. We all know the situation, both with, you know, the real life situation with the invasion of Ukraine and also the CHL situation, you know, not allowing Russian and Belarusian players to be drafted into the import draft, etc. How much is the Russian factor going to, you know, sort of, you know, waffle over the draft this year?
It's going to have an impact for sure. Danilo Yurov is a top 10 player. Does he go in the top 10? Potentially to a team that has multiple picks. I see him sliding towards the end of the first. Where those teams that have multiple picks with their second or third being in the latter stages of the first, I think he becomes a target there. Pavel Minchikov plays in Saginaw. He's been parked there. Even through the pandemic, he was parked there. So he's a guy that you would assume is just going to stay, probably a top 15 pick, because I think there's less concern about him having to go home or going home or renewing the visa and all that sort of thing. Ivan Miroshnichenko, if he's able to come through the cancer, like many suspect he's going to be able to, he too is a top 10 pick. But again, the one thing that's probably not being considered here, Jeff, is does the player himself fear coming over because of the repercussions he might feel politically at home? And I bring up the name Artemi Panarin for that very reason. People, you can go back and look and see some of the noise surrounding Panarin. I think it was 2 years ago, where he had to take a leave during the season to go back because of some things that had, you know, crept in, and some believe that were very politically motivated. I'm not going to go down that road, but are some kids going to say that if they get picked, do they want to come over here? Are they afraid to come over here? Are they allowed to come over here? Can they get the visas to come over and play over here? There are so many question marks that have to be answered. And because we're in real time and there doesn't really seem to be an end in sight for what's going on over there, I don't know, Jeff. There's going to be an impact, no question.
Certainly. Sam, this is always great. Listen, I don't know if you're going to make it to the Pasta House yourself this weekend, but if you do, enjoy. Enjoy the Game 6s tonight and the Game 7s tomorrow. I know you're enjoying the CHL playoffs as well, and to say nothing of the World Championship. So it's a wonderful time of the year for you as well, Sam Cosentino, and I know you're a big baseball guy yourself as well. Thanks as always for this, pal. We'll check back soon.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Little League practice tonight. The Vino House, not the Pasta House. I spent too much time there already. Thanks.
You're the best. Sam Cosentino, our favorite vowel, the O, Cosentino. We'll hit a break and come back to Carl Alsner. You're going to enjoy this conversation, I suspect. Washington Capitals analyst. We'll talk about the Caps and the Cats, and who knows where the conversation takes us with Alsner. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Toronto sports fans. The Fan Morning Show with JD, Blake, and Ailish. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. Jeff Merrick along with you for one more segment here. Don't forget, 3 Game 6s tonight. Rangers facing off against the Pittsburgh Penguins. That one gets underway at 7 o'clock Eastern, CBC and Sportsnet for that one. Quick couple of notes there. Mike Sullivan, head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Sidney Crosby's status, he will not be playing tonight. He did skate this morning, however. Brian Dumoulin continuing off-ice recovery. Status unchanged. Ricard Raquel will be a game-time decision. Tristan Jarry will not play tonight. The Louis Domingue Show continues. That is one of 3 Game 6s tonight. Also, the Calgary Flames face off against the Dallas Stars. The Florida Panthers face off against the Washington Capitals. And speaking of which, please be joined now by Carl Alsner, who's making a really nice transition from one side of the microphone to the other. Former player, now Caps analyst and co-host of the All's Caps podcast. Carl, how are you today? Thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, man, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. It's fun to chat hockey.
Isn't it though? It beats working for a living. And I'll tell you what, like, just on a side note, like, whenever people ask me about when you were playing, people would ask me, like, who's the best interview in the league? Who do you always enjoy talking to? Whether it's a quick scrum or it's a longer form, I always said your name. Like, I always thought that, you know, somewhere whenever Carl Alsner decides that he's done on the ice, I always thought that your transition would be really smooth if you wanted it. At what point did you say, I want this?
Wow. Well, I appreciate that big time. It's a tough call. I think it was probably when two things happened. Originally, I thought I wanted to get into player development or scouting or something like that. And then I was told how tough the schedule is to be a scout. And so I figured, okay, that's, you know, I'm not really looking for a schedule that's that intense right as soon as I'm done playing. And then player development would have been great. Still kind of a tough schedule, but the Caps hired Brooks Orpik, and I knew I wanted to be in the D.C. area. So Orpik had that job. So I'm like, okay, that's out as well. And then Ray Ferraro gave me some great advice, and he just said, if you ever want to get into hockey, don't get too far removed. So, you know, don't take three, 4 years off and then expect to come back in, because there's just too many players that want to be involved in some capacity, and it's hard to stay relevant unless you're a Hall of Famer, you know, a guy that's just got an amazing name that can step away and then come back and people will welcome them with open arms. It's difficult. So I figured, okay, what's the next logical step? And that's media, you know, get involved that way, watch the game still, pay attention, know what's happening around the league. And then that way, if there is some sort of dog barking, if there is some sort of other opportunity down the road, at least people have, seen that I'm still keeping up with things, and it's, you know, just a bit of an easier transition.
Yeah, it just keeps yourself. I mean, first of all, Ray is very wise and very right, as he always is. And you know, the other thing is, like, you know, here at Sportsnet, you know, we most recently had Bruce Boudreau on a ton. And worked, mm-hmm. you know, he worked a number of trade deadlines with us. You know, he went out and, you know, bought a couple of junior teams that he operates to. But he would always keep himself relevant through media, ended himself up with the Vancouver job. You know, John Tortorella would always appear on panels, even though he would love ripping media when he was behind the bench. You know, when he needed to keep his name out there, he wasn't shy about appearing on panels here in Canada at TSN or stateside at ESPN. Paul Maurice was always the same. Like, I just think it's a smart career move to always have, you know, your face out there, your name out there, and people able to listen to your perspectives. And further to that one, I want to get into the discussion here about the Washington Capitals, but really quick, I want to ask about, like, as a defenseman, okay, like, those Capitals Penguins games were awesome. Like, just as a fan, I'm watching, like, they're just great games. Like, mm-hmm. they're fantastic. And I just wonder, like, as a defenseman, I always wonder what it's like to compete against Sidney Crosby. Not just compete against Sidney Crosby, but compete against someone who plays like that, Carl, and, you know, plays on his backhand more than anybody else in the game. Like, what unique challenges, you know, are there in competing against and trying to defend Sidney Crosby? Because you did it for years.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? It's tough. It's a very, very big challenge. And it's a fun challenge because you get to test yourself against, you know, he is the best all around player in the league and has been for over a decade. So I think it's fun. But what makes it so tough is that, like you said, he can play from the forehand and the backhand. So a lot of times as a D-man, you're like, okay, I gotta squash this guy against the boards. I'm going to pin him and I'm going to stop the play. Right. So you do that if you're lucky enough to be able to do that to Sid, great. But he's still looking around when he's pinned up against the boards, and whichever side that puck is on, he can still make a play with his back turned to the majority of the guys. And it doesn't matter if it's forehand or backhand, one hand or two hands, he'll still find a way. And it's not just that he's making a play, but he's usually making it on the tape too, which is a whole nother thing. A lot of guys can put passes into areas for guys, but to put it in the wheelhouse is just a whole another level. So he was always able to do that. There were so many times where I thought I had him dead to rights. The next thing you know, he's passed it through the holder in my skate right on the tape to somebody, and they've scored or got a shot on that. And it's just one of those things that not many guys can do at that level. And then when he decides to turn it up in the playoffs, it's
it's just another thing. You know, when you watch it up close, you're like, okay, I knew he was good, but I didn't see this player in the regular season. This is now a 200-foot player who wants to win and is going to beat everybody. And so, you know, it was a tall task, and it was always fun to play against him, but we always knew we were kind of in one when we had to do it.
You know, I remember talking to, Colby Armstrong works with us, and I've become real good friends with Colby over the last, you know, five or 10 years. And, you know, he told me the story when he first joined the Pittsburgh Penguins, when he first got called up from Wilkes-Barre. They had their first practice, and then, you know, Colby goes to the weight room after the first practice, and there's Sid, who's working harder than anybody in the gym. Like, he's that guy. And Colby says, you know, I went up to Sydney and I'm like, hey, Sid, is there like a league higher than the NHL that I don't know about that you're trying to get to? Like, what are you doing here? Like, you're already the best in the, and I guess he just sets that standard for that room. Who was that guy as we transition to the Caps here? Who was that guy while you were in Washington? Who was the guy that set it for everybody else?
It's really funny that you say that, because there was some sort of culture going on in Pittsburgh, because we had Brooks Orpik come to us and Matt Niskanen, and they were very similar. They were always putting in the work. They knew exactly when they needed to do more, when they needed to kind of let off the gas a little bit, and that was always really interesting. So they clearly had something going on in Pitt, and I'm curious who it was that really set the standard there, because I think that would be nice to know. For us, I'd say there was two guys, you know, besides Brooks and Nisky. There was Jay Beagle, who we always called the defenseman's worst nightmare, because the guy would never stop working. Didn't matter if it was the game or the practice. You didn't want to go against him because he was always trying to get to that puck first and would never give you a break when you're hoping to have an easy rep. And then he was also the same guy that when your legs were really tired and bugging you in pregame skate, instead of trying to do some treatment and take it easy, he would get on the bike and do 20 bike sprints to try and wake them up. And I'm just like, it's like the opposite of what most people would do, right? You think that you need to rest them, and he wanted to just punish them more so that they would be better. So I always thought that was interesting. And then we also had Brooks, like, who was a bit of a gym rat. Oh, yeah. He always wanted to get in there and do something. And it was neat to see. I think that the same thing with Jay. Everybody's bodies are different, and you have to treat them a certain way that's best suited to you. But Brooks was in there all the time. Didn't ever miss a workout that I saw, at least, and always wanted to be better. Same thing on the ice. So, you know, those two guys really set a pretty good standard. And Jay Beagle was my workout partner in the summer too, so I had no other choice but to try and keep up with him. And I think that helped me out a lot.
With Carl Alsner, Caps analyst and co-host of the All's Caps podcast. Let me talk to you about the Caps here. So I don't get the sense, and I've thought this from, you know, the opening puck drop of the first game, that they are intimidated whatsoever by a team that just blazed through the NHL, won the President's Trophy in spectacular fashion, lighting teams up. Like, man, we would see the Florida Panthers, you know, pin up 8 spots, 9 spots on teams on the regular throughout the season. I don't think that bothered the Washington Capitals one bit, because Peter Laviolette had a plan to take away the rush from the Florida Panthers, and at times they've been able to do so. How do you see this series right now as we head into a game 6 tonight?
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, and there's no reason for them to be afraid, because they have been that team. You know, the Caps have been that team a couple times where they've blazed through the league, and it doesn't matter. You know, playoffs is just a different beast. So for them, they know, you know, why be afraid? You know, any team can win. It doesn't matter what you did in the regular season. So that's one thing. Plus, they have, I think, nine Stanley Cup champions plus a coach. They know what it takes to win, so I think that helps a lot. But what's great is, if you've watched the games closely, I think the Caps have been the better team majority of this series, and the Panthers are the perfect example of the saying, you know, if you give them an inch, they're going to take a mile, and that's what's happened. The Caps have made a couple mistakes, and Florida just needs 10 seconds, 5 seconds to capitalize, and they've done that. So that's the issue. So for them to be able to win tonight and take it back to Game 7 is those little mistakes that they've done, you know, a couple pinches that are maybe just a half a second off, or a few turnovers. Those are the things that hurt them, and for them to win, they can't have those happen. And they also need to continue on their PK. Their PK has been stunning. It's amazing. They're not giving Florida anything. They're making them look almost disinterested out there, which obviously they're not, but it's hard when you don't have the freedom that you're used to having. So I think those are two of the major keys, you know, turnovers, which everybody knows in playoffs, and then and continue on that PK trajectory right now.
You know, interesting with the PK as well, that they're doing all this without Tom Wilson. Mm-hmm. Like that is that's a huge factor this in this entire season. You know Tom Wilson. We've watched him play for years. You know him as a teammate. What do you think we should know from your perspective about Tom Wilson?
Yeah, it's a big factor, the fact that they don't have him in there. He does a little bit of everything for that team, and I will say that we got to give a shout out to TJ Oshie, because he's filled in really nicely for him in a lot of spots, especially on the, you know, he's been great on the PP as that net front guy that sometimes Tom will transition into. So big shout out to TJ for what he's done so far. But yeah, Tom just brings a couple different elements. He makes every defenseman and even wingers in the D zone make their decisions half a second faster, you know, and half a second on the ice can mean a lot, right? It's the difference between, you know, executing a pass or finding a better option sometimes, right? And when you know Tom's out there, you get rid of the puck that much faster, and the plays aren't always as great. And then once he's struck that fear in your mind, then he goes out there and scores goals and creates plays. So he's just one of those guys that you're so happy to have on your team. And I will say, I mean, I don't know. This is obviously just guessing, but the one thing that might be nice with him not being out there is because he creates so much havoc out there, the game changes a little bit. And I think the Caps have been really good at being as level-headed as they have been versus sometimes watching the Panthers maybe get a little bit too animated out there. So, I mean, that's just a guess, but you still, any day of the week, you want him in the lineup. So, you know, they're making it work, but the team is better when he's on the ice.
Got about 30 seconds for this one, Carl, but I do want to ask you, because you mentioned TJ Oshie. How did you see the Oshie hit on Bennett?
You know, it looked like he did everything possible to not make it dirty. It was a big hit that happened with one player not really expecting it. But I don't necessarily think it was dirty or it was malicious at all. You know, when you really slow it down, I'm sure you can find a part where there was a shoulder in the head or something like that. But as you know, these things happen fast, and there's not a whole lot you can do about it. And I don't think it was that bad.
No, and, you know, at the end of it, too, like, Bennett turned into it, and I think when you look in the Department of Player Safety, he popped back up, and there's no injury on the play. Anyhow, Game 6 tonight, Florida Panthers facing off against the Washington Capitals, but I'm so happy to see you doing the media. I think it's great. You're a natural at it. Thanks so much for doing this. Look forward to catching up down the road, hopefully sooner than later. Enjoy Game 6 tonight.
Yeah, thanks so much, and thanks for having me on. I love listening to you, so good stuff.
Thank you. Carl Alsner is a former NHL defenseman, now Caps analyst and co-host of the Alls Caps ALZ, or for our neighbor stateside, ALZ, Caps podcast. And with that, tonight, 3 Game 6s. Tomorrow, it's Game 7 Saturday, but tonight it's the Rangers and the Penguins. Again, no Sidney Crosby in this one. 7 o'clock Eastern on CBC and Sportsnet. You can watch the pregame starting at 6:30 with your host, Ron McLean. Panthers and Capitals, 7:30 Eastern. Watch that one on Sportsnet 360. Flames and Stars, 9:30 Eastern. That one on CBC and Sportsnet. Flames look to close. Panthers look to close. Penguins look to close out. The Rangers win, Caps win, or the Stars win, we get another Game 7, and Game 7 is reserved for Saturday. Oilers and Kings, Maple Leafs in Tampa, Carolina, and Boston. It's going to be a great weekend of hockey. Enjoy it. Really enjoyed our guests today, Carl Alsner, Sam Cosentino, Eric Francis, Patrick Marleau, just called it a career this week. Thank you so much for stopping by, and Elliot Friedman, who kicked off the program as he does each and every day. Thanks to Lance Kennedy, thanks to Matt Marchese, and mostly thanks to you for listening this week. Merrick Hockey Show, back on Monday.